All right, welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast. I'm your host, Noah Rubin, and this is episode 62, and it is draft week. So we will be discussing the NBA draft with Tyler Rucker from No Ceilings. So let's go ahead and get into it. And quickly, before I bring Tyler in, I just wanted to remind you guys that support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe so you can trim with confidence, treat your wrinkle berries, and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming, no surprises. Trust me, this trimmer will be your crown jewel's new best buddy. As a reminder, that is 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love and feel free as a dove. As I said, we are going to be talking about the NBA draft. And I'm going to go ahead and bring in Tyler, the draft expert himself. This is normally a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast, but we're going to talk a little bit more about just the general draft stuff, because that's also very important when we're doing our dynasty analysis. But before we get into that, Tyler, how are you doing?
Doing good. It's a fun time of the year. A lot of excitement in the basketball world right after the NBA finals. You know, now it's draft season, so everyone's getting pumped about the incoming crop of talent. And I appreciate you having me on, Noah. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This should be a lot of fun. I know we have a few prospects that we want to talk about, and then we'll get into any questions that there may be about the draft, about individual prospects, perhaps about what some teams might do, some of your favorite players as well as that. But I'm going to go ahead and bring up this slideshow because we have five guys that we said we were going to talk about. And the first one is Donovan Clingan, who averaged 13 points, 7.4 rebounds, 2.5 blocks, shot 63.9% from the floor, 58.3% from the free throw line, played 22.6 minutes per game while winning his second straight national championship. You guys have him at number two on your latest big board. Now, with the five guys that you wanted to talk about that we're going to talk about, I like four of them. Clingan's the guy that I'm just not as sold on as I think some other people are. So can you sell me on Donovan Clingan? Because I have my Hawks shirt on. Like, they're saying that we might take him. Why should I be excited about Donovan Clingan?
Yeah, I completely get it. You know, this is a guy going back to last year I had some reservations on, because there was a time when he was a freshman and he was coming off the bench. You know, people were saying, hey, could this be a potential lottery guy that's just going to crash the party for last year's draft? And I thought, you know, we needed to see a lot more. We needed to see extended minutes, see what he could do with more playing time. This year, he kind of had a couple preseason injuries, which it got a little, you know, scary for some evaluators, some draft scouts. And then, you know, you saw when he came back, it was a little raw. He was trying to get his footing, get the conditioning back up. And once he kind of found that groove, it was just a completely different player. He was really dominant, really effective. The defense is special. He's humongous, and he's got the wingspan you want for a big man. There's just a lot of offensive upside. You know, everyone likes to focus on his defense. There's a lot of offense that's kind of just starting to scratch the surface. I think he's a really talented playmaker. You know, it's something that people will bring up, but I think it's also like underappreciated of how special it can be. So I think you're just talking about a player with good feel around the basket that does some really special stuff defensively. And, you know, the offense is still got plenty to unlock. So I don't think he's going to be this, you know, 3-point shooter that everyone's hyping throughout the pre-draft process, but he's a Jonas Valanciunas that can go out and hit a couple a game and make you respect it. I think that creates a potential two-way, you know, headache for defenses. And he's just going to be maybe a high floor guy in this class that can be productive, can do some damage on the boards and play at this league for a long time.
Yeah. And the offense is more of what I have questions about. And with the rest of these guys, we'll agree and it'll be on the same page, but I am going to ask about Clingan. You mentioned his playmaking. So I think watching some of the assists that he's had and just knowing that he was playing in Dan Hurley's offense, how much of his playmaking do you think was, hey, this guy's a very talented playmaker versus it's just a product of the offense that was being run?
Yeah, I think it was kind of a perfect fit for both parties. You know, you got to see Klingon's playmaking on full display. And then because of the vision and the anticipation that he had, it also allowed Dan Hurley and UConn to put a lot more trust in him. So there's some instances where it's just great feel. It's great awareness. You know, he'll get like a high ball screen and dribble and throw a jump pass to the opposite corner. And you're like, that's something a point guard does, not a 7'2", 280 pound big man. So there's some fun, special stuff that really is unique for someone in that position. I know there's a lot of talented playmakers or passers in the NBA today, but you know, I think Klingon has the potential to be up there with some of the big names. And I think he's, you know, at that size, if you have that playmaking, that feel as a passer, you know, I think you could do some dangerous stuff if you're running the offense from the, you know, top of the wing or at the elbow. I think Klingon's going to be a fun player to play with because you got to respect that. And then all of a sudden, if players are coming for handoffs, like, he's a dangerous lob threat. So he's, as long as he stays healthy, and that's always been the one thing with him, but this pre-draft process, there's been no concerns or no buzz about that. So it sounds like, you know, everything's going good for him.
Yeah. And maybe I'm starting to talk myself into it a little bit more because you mentioned, you know, dribble handoffs a little bit and then getting into pick and rolls. If he's in Atlanta with Trae Young, that sounds like a pretty ideal fit. And we've seen a number of NBA teams have success having the center as sort of the offensive hub, not saying he's going to be the Nikola Jokic playmaker. But even J.J. Redick was talking about it during his press conference for the Lakers, getting Anthony Davis involved as kind of the hub of the offense. Like, having a center that can pass is a very valuable trait. I think on the defensive side, Klingon is known as a good shot blocker. I don't think that's much of a question at all. But seeing, I guess, a guy like Walker Kessler, who also was a very good shot blocker that has had his minutes limited at times. We've seen Rudy Gobert, who's considered one of the best defensive players in the league. Like, he was getting killed on switches at times during the playoffs. I mean, obviously nobody's expecting the 7-footers to be able to guard Luka Doncic when he gets switches on them. But do you think that maybe him just being a very big center could limit how many minutes a team would play him, specifically against guys like a Luka Doncic, just because of the mismatches that would prevent them from switching on their defense? Is that something that concerns you at all, or do you think he moves better than I'm realizing?
You know, it's kind of one of those both of those worlds. This year, I thought he was going to just get picked alive, and teams were going to be like, "Okay, prove it. You can, you know, prove that you can switch and hang it." And he shocks me sometimes with how much ground he can cover. Like, you understand he's that big, and you understand, like, okay, his weight, he should be heavy footed. He should take a while. Then he just shocks you with like some recoveries, some rotations. I think he's also good at putting himself in the right position to kind of be a step ahead at sometimes. There's obviously some instances where, like, okay, a quicker guard can get around him, but I think you're going to be just pumped about what he brings to the table as a potential starting big. I think there is a lot of, you know, Rudy Gobert connections with the Hawks and Quinn Snyder. It makes a lot of sense why Atlanta's intrigued with Klingon, but I think he shocks you. He surprises people on defense with how much he can offer versatility wise. And, you know, when we've seen players offensively, like when they're in a groove, they can take over. He can do that defensively. Like, he gets in a rhythm and really can make an impact and take over with momentum and just feeling good. So I think Klingon's just one of these talents that, the more you watch, and especially the second half of the year when he was healthy and the conditioning was right, you know, you see a player like, oof, this is going to be a player that could really make an impact for a very long time in this league if he stays healthy.
Yeah, and I think the health will be a question. But going into how he could fit in the NBA, we'll do this with everybody, but if you had to select one team that's within his, I guess, kind of realm of possibilities, I guess not like Boston or anybody like that, but where, okay, Donovan Klingon may get drafted in to this team, who would be the best fit for him, do you think?
You know, I'm not just saying this because you're a Hawks fan, but it kind of comes down to what they're going to do. But I think him and Trae Young would be just a fantastic duo because it just kind of gives Trae, and I'm not, you know, Clint Capela is great. Okongwu is great, but this is a different type of beast. And this is someone that you throw lobs up to, it's going to be hard to overthrow him because he's just got that humongous wingspan. I think it's around 7'5", 7'6", at 7'2". And the thing that shocks me always with Klingon is he gets up the floor in a hurry. Like, he covers ground. He's not just this lumbering giant. Like, he can move, and there's a lot of times where he's throwing down lob threats in full sprint. You're just, like, a little wowed at the athleticism. So I think if you could get Klingon with Trey and the Hawks and – you know, you have him as a lob threat. You also have him as a, you know, last line of the defense, and you've got, you know, Trey coming off of dribble handoffs with Klingon. That creates a headache right away. So I'd like him there. And the tough part too is I like him in a lot of those spots at the top. So it's going to be really interesting to see where he ends up, because I think you can make a case that he would fit pretty well with a lot of those teams. But I really like him with Atlanta. We'll see if they really pull that trigger, but I think he'd be an interesting fit there.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, with the way your big boards work at No Ceilings, it's an aggregate, I guess, of all of your individual big boards, and then it's kind of compiled together. Where is Klingon on your individual big board?
I have him at 3, and I've had him kind of in my top 10 all year. The second half of the year, I started moving him up. I got him to 6. I had him there for a while, and then I just kept watching what he did from the first half of the season to the second half, and just was remarkable, like the strides he was taking. And that's the player, you know, I remember watching him in the beginning of the year, kind of against Kansas and Hunter Dickinson. And I was like, ooh, he just looks rough. And I just thought he looked kind of all over the place, looked out of shape, looked like he was trying to get back from an injury. And then once he got healthy, you just started seeing the light come on and you're like, okay, so if you're getting this version, this player is a top 5 pick pretty easily. And he's had a good pre-draft process. Teams are raving about him. So, you know, after I watched that, I've been moving him up. And that's the fun part of this year, is you keep watching film and you keep going, I like this guy. Why don't I move him up more? So I just slowly kept creeping up, and I ended up with him at 3.
Yeah. Big boards are entirely just all over the place. Doesn't, no matter who you look at, there's going to be somebody in somebody's top 10 or 15 that you're like, I just saw him at 50 with somebody else's board. So it is fun, just the variation with everybody's big board. And so seeing you high on Klingon early in the season, that's also pretty fun as well. And seeing that kind of work out, that now everybody's kind of on the same page as you, I'm sure that's pretty cool. We'll move on to Reed Sheppard. He averaged 12.5 points, 4.1 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 2.5 steals, 2.3 three-pointers. He shot 53.6% from the floor, 52.1% from 3, which is unreal, and then 83.1% from the free throw line, played 28.9 minutes per game. Y'all have him at number 4 on the No Ceilings big board. He was more of a 6. I mean, he was a 6 man for most of the season. I think he started 5 games. But as I mentioned, the shooting was unreal, and then the steal percentage was unreal, which are two things that are going to translate just wonderfully for fantasy. But the only kind of slight concerns that I kind of have, and again, I love Reed Sheppard, so I'm trying to come up with something to talk about, but will his, I guess he's a 6'3 guy. Is that size going to be any sort of issue for a guy that's probably more of a shooting guard with some playmaking ability, or do you even potentially see him as a guy that could be a point guard eventually?
He's been the most fascinating prospect to evaluate this cycle and talk to teams about, and, you know, hear from scouts about what they think about him. Everyone's kind of got their different opinion. And then it seems like any doubts you have, you kind of come back to like, well, he can just play, like, he's just good. And, you know, I think the size was a concern all year long. You know, we've seen college sites are very favorable with their measurements to enter the season. We're usually like, that looks like maybe an inch or two too tall. So I think he was listed around, you know, 6'3", 6'4", and we were like, I don't know about that. And then you start hearing from scouts that are like, I'm skeptical of that. But then you just watch him on tape, and he's got some of the most enjoyable film of anyone in this class. Like, I mean, his season he just had was just one of the best freshman classes you'll see in terms of just efficiency, what he did all over the place, the steal percentage, and some of the games he just can take over. He's got a beautiful shot. The million-dollar question has been with scouts and teams is like, well, is he a point guard, or do you think he's just a combo guard that you can kind of throw out there. Some teams see him as a point guard, and I think some teams are very passionate about seeing him as a point guard, and I think that's the teams that are going to be very intrigued to take him early. At the end of the day, I think you could kind of point and be like, well, he's not that tall. He's still had an unbelievable year, and he's got a lot of skills that NBA teams are coveting. And I think if you're thinking, hey, we're getting Reed Sheppard alongside what we have going, you're pretty excited about that, because he's also a player that just knows how to make teammates better. Like, he's very talented passer, playmaker, transition. He finds people open all the time. And then on top of all that, like, he shoots the crap out of the ball. So he's just, there's a lot of good stuff. And it's one of those evaluations where you kind of go, yeah, he's not 6'4", 6'5". If he was, he'd be going number one. But I think at the end of the day, you're just like, hey, Reed Sheppard can play. Like, I think he's going to be a guy that plays at the NBA for a long time. The upside, we don't know, but it wouldn't shock me if he keeps just having great success.
Yeah, and maybe this was something that was already known before the combine, but seeing him have a 42-inch vertical just made me just like him even more. I didn't realize that he had that much ups. Like, I just didn't realize that because I was so focused on the shooting and the steals. And then, well, I guess with the defense, so the steal rate, the steal number is just unreal. But I know also, like, just through reading the draft guide that you guys put out, which is awesome work, that there are questions about him as an actual just defender, as opposed to just what he can do as a playmaker on defense, just him being a lockdown defender. Are you a believer that Reed Sheppard can be like a guy that's going to just pick up the opposing team's either primary ball handler or main scorer at some point in his career?
I think so. You know, it's tough with Reed because there's just a lot of different stuff defensively you're looking at when you're kind of evaluating these guys. When it comes to him on the ball, like, he's got some of the quickest, most violent hands, and that's why that steal percentage is up there. He's just fantastic with reading what the opposition's trying to do, and his point of attack's fantastic. So he can give you a nightmare with that, just because he's got great anticipation about, like, if you're trying to cross, he'll meet you right there, and it's off to the other, you know, off to the races. I think it's just some off-ball stuff or you know, navigating screens. And I think that's the type of stuff that NBA teams will be like, we can work with that. We can kind of coach him up. I think he's going to be a talented player defensively. I think he's going to be smart. I think he's going to be a good on-ball guy because he's a hard worker. He's going to be one of those guys that's obsessed with trying to get better. And you know, he was listed a little lighter than I thought, but when you watch him on tape, he's bulky. He's a little strong bodied, so I think that's going to fill out too. And I think it will be at a point where Reed can do some damage on the ball. It's just he's also going to get targeted. A lot of guys as rookies are targeted, and a lot of rookies struggle with defense. It takes some time to kind of find your groove, but for what he does offensively, I think the defense will come around and get to a respectable level for sure. And he's not a bad defender. It's just there's clear times where it's like teams are going to go at him. Teams are going to make him prove it. And if he can just kind of figure out how to, you know, navigate screens or little off the ball stuff, like I think he'll have some success.
Yeah. And there's been, I guess, a lot of the rumors are pointing towards Houston liking him at three. I saw there was a report earlier, I forgot who put it out, that there might be a trade where Memphis trades up to three to take Klingon. And that case, I don't know exactly where Reed Sheppard would fall, but if you were to pick a team within his realm of possibilities that would be the best for his career, what team would you pick?
You know, if there's so much buzz about Reed right now. There's a lot of rumors. Houston's been the team that everyone's connecting. There's also been buzz. Teams are trying to go up for him as well. I know Charlotte was a team that was looking at trying to go get Reed, and it's going to be tough because I think that's a popular sales pitch right now. It's like, hey, we got a lot of calls coming in. I would love somehow if he ended up with San Antonio. I think that would be a fantastic fit just because they need shooting. They need backcourt help. And I think Reed would give them a very big boost. You know, he'd get a lot of open shots with Victor there. So that'd be a fun one too. But I do like him if he ends up in Houston. I just think that's an interesting kind of a vision moving forward. I think they're close because of how good they're getting defensively. So if you're getting a Reed Sheppard, like the best version of him, I think all of a sudden it's going to be like, whoa, you got a lot of different ways you can really do some damage. So it might be a little bit crowded at first just because Van Vliet's there and everything, but starting out, if he's coming off the bench or one of your sixth or seventh men, I think that's a fantastic get for a team on the rebuild. So one of those two teams, I think it would be a great landing spot for Reed.
Definitely. I'm not too concerned about where he lands. I'm genuinely just confident about him as a player. But it is, you know, I think Houston would be one where it takes him a little bit longer, not to figure things out, but to play a big role just because of how much lottery talent they already have there. But moving on to Devin Carter, who you guys have at number seven, averaged 19.7 points, 8.7 rebounds, 3.6 assists, 1.8 steals, one block, and 2.5 three-pointers this past season. Took a big jump as a shooter with his percentages as well, just from this past season compared to his first 2 years. When I was watching him on film, I believe he's listed at around like 6'3 with like a 6'8, 6'9 wingspan, which is crazy. But he felt bigger on film than 6'3 because I had originally seen 6'3, watched him on film, was like, that's wrong. Like, he has to be just bigger than that. But I think there's a lot of people that are coming around on the idea that, hey, this guy's going to be very impactful in the NBA. But how does he fit in? Like, you see him as more of a point guard, more of a shooting guard, or like, I guess, what kind of role is he going to have? May just depend on where he gets drafted. But what do you think of Devin Carter?
I think it's the NBA right now is getting to a point where it's almost like, hey, we need two guards in the backcourt. It's almost like, hey, it's combo guards. Can they both work? Can they both run the offense? Can we get different looks that way? I kind of get the vibe with him, like, hey, you might want him as like a Derek White with, you know, what the Celtics do. Obviously, he's a little smaller, but he's very long. And it's funny you said that, Noah. Like, watching him on tape, I had the same vibe. I was like, he's 6'4", sit easily. And then you get the measurements. You're like, what? Like, this doesn't – but I think it's the length and how much ground he covers. And you just always feel him out there watching film. It's one of those guys, and with scouting, you're either like, okay, I forgot he was out there, or, oh, I know when he's out there. And usually with bigs, you know. But with Devin Carter, he's just all over the place. He's always moving. He's always hustling. High motor. Everything you hear about him is just sensational. I think just the role you're going to have is just teams are going to be pumped to draft him because you're like, he can do a lot of stuff that we need in this backcourt. And I think the size, yes, playing off the ball might be a little bit tough, but I think the length, the motor, the athleticism make up for it in a big way. So you get him with a running mate in the backcourt, I think you're just pumped that either he can run the offense or he can play off the ball a little bit and do some damage. I think it's just a pretty high floor pick now, you know, a guy that's had a fantastic pre-draft process. So I think a lot of fans, because they're seeing how easy this could be for this guy to have success for a long time.
Yeah, and you mentioned Derek White, Devin Carter. I think everybody's kind of on the same page that this guy is going to make an impact defensively. And he's going to be a very good defender, which could make him a nice plug-and-play guy for potentially a team that's looking to add to their rotation that is a contending team. But now he's starting to rise up, and I think kind of top 10 potential to where he could go. With that, like, how do you see his offensive game developing? Because I know that he did take a big leap as a shooter this past season. Do you think that's something that's going to stick in the NBA? Or do you think that's something that once he gets there, okay, maybe that was more of a, I don't want to call it a fluke season, but, you know, is that something that you think sticks?
It's going to be interesting. I think early on, it probably is going to get watered down a little bit. You know, Providence had one of their top scorers go down with, I believe it was an ACL injury early, and they needed someone to step up. It was like a big, like, uh-oh, where's the offense coming from now? And Devin Carter just stood up and was like, okay, lean on me. And he would take some shots that you're watching on tape, and you're like, what in the world? And then it's nothing but net, you know, 6 feet beyond the arc going away from his body. You're like, how did he make that? So he had a lot of freedom with that team, and, you know, seeing his percentages from outside, it is like mid to high 30%. And, you know, people will be like, he's okay shooter. He's got a funky release. And it's like the shots he were taking, I'm impressed where he finished up. So I think if the shot selection gets a little bit more, you know, focused, if you want to put it nicely. I don't think he's going to have that much freedom as a rookie, but I think he could be a respectable floor spacer. He's really crafty getting downhill. He's patient. He can, see windows and kind of feel out people. And he's also a talented playmaker. He's just tough around the basket too. So there's just a lot of stuff with Devin Carter. He checks the boxes. And, you know, if we're even talking about fantasy, you know, I think he's going to be a very fun rookie to get fantasy wise, because he might be one of those that just gets a lot of assists, gets a couple steals a game, gets a block, you know, hits a couple threes. So I think he's going to be a fun player. It's going to be fascinating where he ends up, because there's a lot of teams that are either wanting to draft him, hoping he falls to them, or trying to go up to get him. He's a very popular name right now.
Yeah. And if there was one team for him that you would want him to be on just for his own success, I guess kind of in that around pick 10-ish late lottery, what team do you think that he would thrive on the most?
Gosh, I mean, there's so many. I think that's just the every team you talk to is like, he'd be perfect here. Like, everyone's just a fan. You know, if you asked me a month ago, I would have been like, oh, Miami would have been perfect at 15. I don't think he's making it to there. So if they want him, they're going to have to probably go get him. I think his range starts at 8 with San Antonio with their second first round pick. And, you know, a team even down lower like Utah at 10, I think him and Keontae George would be really fun together. So it's one of those prospects you kind of talk yourself into with every team. Like, it's just like, hey, every team would like to get a Devin Carter. So I think San Antonio, Utah would be like my top two teams that I think realistically could be swinging for him. If he somehow is on the board later, I think, you know, maybe a team like Miami trades up, because he'd be a perfect fit for that team, that organization, and what they like to do.
Yeah, that was one thing, like, pretty quickly I was like, yeah, this is the hashtag Heat culture pick of this draft cycle. Like, it, like, he just fits it very well. And then now you're right, he probably isn't going to get down that far. But it also is interesting, because if he is drafted by the Spurs, he's going to be on a, and they might be competing for a play-in spot, but more of like a lottery team, as opposed to one pick later, it's Memphis or 11. Who knows what Chicago is going to do, if they're going to be competing or trying to start a rebuild. But then OKC is the pick after that, Sacramento after that. So he could be on one of the worst teams in the league or a playoff team. And I think that could really alter what his rookie season looks like. Is he going to have not a green light like he had in college, but somewhere more close to that, versus if he's on, you know, if it's OKC, like, he's a rotational piece that's probably still making a big impact, but not seeing the same amount of shots.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you just brought up another team, you know, Memphis. Is his dad's Anthony Carter, played in the NBA for a very long time. He's an assistant coach there. Like, there's a lot of connections. Yeah. So it's a hot range for Devin Carter. And I think also other teams will notice that and be like, okay, if we want him, we're going to have to get ahead of these teams. So that's why this year's shaping up to be so exciting, because there's a lot of different curveballs that could happen on draft night.
Yeah. And we'll move on to Dalton Knecht. Out of Tennessee, averaged 21.7 points, 4.9 rebounds, 1.8 assists, and 2.6 threes. You guys have him number 9 on the latest big board. We know he can shoot. What else translates to the NBA? Because obviously he was an incredible scorer for Tennessee. Is that scoring prowess that he showed, like, how much of that is going to translate to the NBA? Or is he just going to be more of a shooter?
You know, it's tough for me, because I see there's a lot more upside with Dalton. I think everyone kind of focuses on his age and he's 23, and it's like, well, yes, but, and there's a draft history of older players struggling, but times have kind of changed. Like, the NIL has been more important than ever. So players now are eager to stay. I think that history of older players is going to change in the upcoming years when it comes to, like, success at the next level. But Dalton's also a late bloomer. He's a guy that just had crazy growth spurts, like, not in 1 year, like, multiple years. Transferred from Northern Colorado to the SEC and was the best player in the SEC this year. And he's not just a shooter. I think a lot of people see him and they're like, oh, white guy that's a shoot, he can shoot a lot of threes. And it's like, no, he's nasty. He's physical. He's tough, and he gets downhill and he can get up. Like, he's very explosive. So I think there's a lot of stuff that is going the right way for Dalton Knecht. I wouldn't be shocked if he's one of the, you know, rookies in this class that really hits the ground running and is making some noise. Maybe even if he lands with the right team, maybe he's making some noise as a potential Rookie of the Year candidate. I just think he's going to light up the scoring column. What Tennessee had him do last year and how impressive he was with his numbers, like, he was their offense. They did everything and everything possible to get him the ball, and he's making ridiculous shots on the move. They're running sets where he's running across the court three times before shooting away from his body, and he'd hit nothing but net. It got to a point where you're shocked when he was missing sometimes. So I think at the NBA, if all of a sudden life's a little bit easier when it comes to him getting shots, I think it's going to shock some people. He's got the potential to really make some noise early on. But I love Dalton Knecht. It's one of those players that was a pretty easy evaluation this year offensively when it comes to just his potential.
Yeah, a friend of mine is a diehard Tennessee fan, so I was getting propaganda in group chats all season long. So I was forced to keep up with Dalton Knecht, which did turn me into a Dalton Knecht fan. But I'm a believer in the offense, but on the defensive side, do you think that's something that will limit him in the NBA, potentially limit his minutes, or is something that he's going to be effective enough to stay on the floor because of how much he's contributing on offense?
Yeah, I think he'll take his bumps and bruises early on, like most rookies. You know, Dalton's biggest thing coming into this year was the defense. It was like, hey, it's what's holding him back. And it kind of needed to show, like, hey, there's at least a light of development. And I think there was that. You know, he's a hard worker from everything you've heard. He's a tough kid that wants to get better. Part of the reason he wanted to go to Tennessee was to play for Rick Barnes and focus on his defense, become a better defender. And the offense, like you said, it's not in question. He's going to be good and effective offensively. If he can be respectable defensively, and I think he's trending that way, he's going to play for a long time. Like, he's just got that ability. And it's one of those in this class where, you know, we always like to obsess with age, but when you get to Dalton Knecht and some of these other guys, you're just like, hey, they can just play. They can do a lot of good stuff. If we're focusing just on the age, you know, we're probably missing out on a really good player. So I think the defense is going to be fine. I think he's going to be able to stick on the court, and, you know, it's going to be one of those things where if you have a good lineup and balance, maybe put some defensive assets around him, he just does a lot of really good stuff offensively. He gives you a kind of a dangerous weapon. So I think he's going to be a popular name on draft night too.
And is there a team potentially, I guess, in that kind of late lottery, you know, maybe late 8, 9, 10 range, that you think would be a really good fit for, you know, I guess him helping that team from day one, as well as given the chance to develop?
Yeah, you know, it's tough because he's also one of these players, like, in this class, there's not a lot of great shooters. So he's kind of got that little advantage of being like, if you need shooting, I'm your guy. And I think you get to even as high as 6 to Charlotte, I think would be a fantastic piece alongside LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller. And then you get to Portland at 7, which could be intriguing with what they've got going with Shaedon Sharpe and Scoot Henderson. And then right down, now you kind of go to every team right next. You go Spurs at 8, make a lot of sense with the shooting they need. So shooting's always desired in the drafts. And, you know, Dalton Knecht's got the case to be a shooter with upside, with scoring upside. So I think he makes a lot of sense in a ton of places. I mean, you can make an argument for him pretty much everywhere. You even get down to teams like Utah and stuff. Like, absolutely, he'd make some sense there. So it's going to be fun to figure out where he goes, because he can pack a punch, and he might be a heck of a player in his rookie year.
Yeah, definitely. I agree 100%. It will be interesting to see who is the team that pulls the trigger on getting arguably the best shooter in the draft. The last guy that we have is Matis Bouzelis, who played for G League Ignite. Averaged 14.1 points, 6.6 rebounds, 1.9 assists, almost a steal, almost 2 blocks, almost 1 3. The shooting percentages weren't great, 45.5% from the floor, 26.1% from 3, and then 69.6% from the line. You guys have him at number 12. Is that kind of like, I don't know, where'd you have him on your personal board? Does that line up like number 12?
Yeah, I had him around 10 or 11. He's going to probably be a player that goes earlier than this. Bouzelis is just one of those names it's been a puzzling year for some of these high upside guys. So it's been one of those names where you might get a different answer everywhere you talk. Some teams this year were just like, I'm out. Other teams were like, I'm back in, you know, so it's, he had a rough start to the year. Obviously you see the shooting splits, and this was a player coming out of high school that was around mid 40s, and everyone thought he was just going to, you know, be a lights out shooter at the G League, and he just never came around. He had some good stretches this year where you were like, okay, I'm starting to see it, and then kind of would tail off. And some might point out to just that was the Ignite season, kind of in a storybook ending, was just like, oh, it was rough for a lot of parties. But I think teams are still intrigued with the tools he's got. He's a 6'10 forward with potential floor spacing ability and some good feel. And I thought he did take some positive strides defensively this year. So a lot of teams still like him a ton. It wouldn't be shocking if he goes very early in this draft. It wouldn't be shocking if he goes maybe a little later than some are expecting, but this is going to be a year where, you know, it only takes one team. So he's got a lot of potential. It's just kind of, where's the right fit for Bezelis and with NBA teams? Because if all of a sudden he starts shooting it from outside, it unlocks a completely different player that could be something special in this class.
Yeah. And the Ignite season was an absolute mess, which, you know, well-known, well-documented, which, you know, Modest Bezelis just didn't have a great season. I know early on in the process, he was much higher on most draft boards. He slid down a little bit. He seems to be, and maybe it's just because early on, not many people have, or prospects have been interviewed a ton, but he seems to be like the best quote in the draft. I mean, he had the one where he was, this one just, I don't know why I love it so much, but just saying, no, Zachary Risichet, he doesn't want to play me one-on-one. His agent won't set it up. He's scared. Like, I'm better at everything. Like, that kind of confidence, I like that a lot. He also had, this isn't like just a great quote, but he just said, like, I just didn't have a good shooting season, but I am a good shooter. Are you in the camp that believes that he will be at least better than 26% three-point shooter in the NBA?
Yeah, I think he's going to improve for sure. You just, you know, it's like I said earlier, you saw stretches this year where he's getting in that mid-30s and it looks like, okay, when things are clicking a little bit better, I see the route and the potential. I just think there was too many times where you're like, okay, I'm wanting more. Like, Bezelis, the sell on him coming into the year was that he was going to be this elite shooter from outside. And you know, 1 year doesn't tell a story. So if it was a bad year for him with the Ignite, I completely get it. I think some teams are going to buy into, you know, him having a bounce back year, even as a rookie. And the shooting form looks good. It's solid. It's compact. Like, if he can add some weight, just some strength to fill out, I think there's a world in which he could be one of these best players from this class. It's just, how legit are we going to get with that shot? Are we going to be saying, okay, ended up being like a 33% from outside, or is he going to just all of a sudden find his groove and, you know, be in that high 30s, early 40s? It's going to be interesting to see. But yeah, I'm buying that he's going to bounce back a little bit with his shot, because it just looks consistent. It looks smooth. I would love him to go to a place where he's going to not be the center of attention, which usually is what you're going to happen when you're a rookie. You shouldn't be the guy that they're all focusing on. But if he played alongside with some players that could create, I think Bezelis could be really effective.
And I think kind of another thing that at least I had kind of interpreted about what kind of prospect he is, just kind of like do a little bit of everything. We see, you know, almost a steal per game, almost two blocks per game. One of the comparisons that I think is pretty popular is Franz Wagner, but I don't know. I don't know how good of a comparison that actually is. Only average two assists per game. Granted, that doesn't necessarily define who he is as a playmaker, as a ball handler, as a passer. Are you a believer in him as, you know, probably not a primary or even secondary playmaker, but a pretty good playmaker from a three or four spot?
Yeah, I think he's got good feel. The Franz one always kind of gives me a little like, let's calm down a little bit, because Franz just, I think Bezelis is more, I still think of him more of kind of like a four that's wanting to be a three. And I think Franz is just a three, like, with just, and I'm talking about just movement. I think Bezelis is a little bit more stiff, but I also see some stuff where you're like, okay, this is impressive for how young he is, how big he is. And also I think once his body fills out, it's going to help him a little bit. But He makes the right read. He can definitely do that. It's just, it was a tough year to evaluate when it came to that situation with the Ignite. Was pretty brutal. So I think, you know, if he's with the right team, like absolutely he can make the right play. He's got good vision. You can give him the ball. He can do a little bit of stuff. I just think there's a little bit more rawness. And once, you know, he keeps working on that and finds his groove, like absolutely if everything comes together, he's going to be a special talent.
Yeah. And for, you know, just like everybody else, what team would be the best? I know you mentioned, you know, a team where the attention isn't fully on him. And I think pretty much Washington would be the only possible landing spot where I think that would be the case, where he is potentially one of the focal points of the offense. But what do you think would be the most ideal landing spot for him?
You know, it's one of those I go back and forth with all the time. I think Detroit makes some sense at five. And I think that's, NBA teams are still very high on his upside and potential. And I think that's where you're getting to the point where you're like, okay, especially in this class, you're like, do we want to swing upside here? Or is it kind of going a little bit more towards like the quote safer guys, if there is such a thing? But I think with him in Detroit, you know, they need shooting. They need some versatility with, you know, positional versatility. And you got Cade Cunningham there. You got Jaden Ivey there, who I think is going to have a good year. So if you have those two guys that can create and kicking out to Bozelis on the wing that can shoot, I think that gives you some nice punch on the offense. And I think he'd be a nice fit there. So it's just going to be interesting to see if that's where he ends up, or maybe he goes a little lower. Very interesting. I mean, Portland at seven, you could probably talk yourself into, or somewhere a little bit behind that, but he won't be on the table too long. I like him in Memphis too at nine, but I don't know if he'll still be there, but I think I like that fit.
Yeah. Detroit at five tends to be when I'm pulling up Fanspo and doing mocks. He ends up going there to Detroit, or sometimes to Charlotte at six, getting like LaMelo at the one with Brandon Miller in a pretty big wing rotation, Brandon Miller, Miles Bridges, Modest Bozelis. But we'll see what ends up happening. We do have a few questions here. And then if there aren't any more, I have a few more so I can keep taking up some more of your time. First one here is from CouchHad, friend of the show. Is Alex Saar pulling an Eli Manning? The best, he's bringing this up because I'm a Hawks fan, so that's great. But the best thing that could happen for fantasy players, because it made the Hawks front court plans clearer than they have ever been with them pivoting to two other bigs. So I guess, first of all, do you think that Alex Saar would pull an Eli Manning if the Hawks were interested in taking him?
No, I don't think so entirely. It's going to be faster to see what happens. If, you know, it seems like every single day you talk to a person, they have a different answer. Forever I was getting told about Richichet at one. Then all of a sudden you get out of nowhere. I think Saar's going, you're like, whoa, okay, that's the first. So you pay attention to that. Then we get Klingenbuzz. I like Saar. I think if Atlanta took Saar, I think they would be clearly moving towards, hey, we're going to rebuild a little bit. We're going to move some guys. We're going to open things up. Because I think Saar is one of those, you just got to get him reps. You got to let him play, learn by playing. Like if you're giving him limited minutes, I think it's not going to help him right away. I think that's why a lot of people are intrigued with him going two, because I think Washington would let him just play and figure it out. But if he went to Atlanta, it's one of those high upside guys that might take a little bit of time to fall into place, but you'd be really excited if you could get him on the floor, get him time, let him learn by mistakes, and then get some confidence. So I think wherever he ends up, it's going to be really interesting. And if Atlanta does pull the trigger there, I think it would be one of those, like, we're clearly going to maybe blow this up a little bit. And I don't know if they're ready to completely go all in on that, which maybe that's why they're leaning towards Richichet.
Yeah, I've been kind of, since the Hawks won the lottery, been saying it's Alex Saar bust. So then now all these other rumors are, I mean, I'm already pretty much mentally preparing for them to not take Alex Saar. But with what CouchHad is talking about here with the two bigs, with Onyeka Okongwu and Clint Capela, it's been an issue in fantasy for the past few years. And it finally seemed like, hey, maybe this summer they're going to trade Capela. And then they win the freaking lottery, and now they're going to have two centers again. So we'll see what they end up doing. I think that if they end up going Richichet, they still might trade Capela, which might be the best thing for for fantasy purposes of having Onyeka Okongwu play 32 minutes a game instead of being stuck in a minute split. This is a general draft question here that I think you will have a much better answer for than I will, but will the draft being divided into 2 days lead to more trades? So for those watching that don't know, the draft will start at 8 p.m. on Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, and that'll be the first round. Second round will start 4 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. Tyler, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be really interesting with this format. I had spoken to an exec earlier in the year and kind of had asked, like, hey, do you like it? And at first he was like, yeah, I did. And then he's like, you know what? No, I don't. And I was like, oh, why? And then he's like, because I think if you got your stuff together, you should be able to dominate the draft pretty well. And if you don't, it's chaotic. So you're all over the place. Now it gives people time to regroup and kind of evaluate what they want to do. So I think teams are going to take a deep breath after the first night and then start looking at like, okay, like let's pick up the phone, see what we can do. And I do think the second round, especially this year with the depth in this class, I think it could present a lot more action, a lot more movement too. If you kind of look at your cap guys and you're like, okay, can we afford to go get a pick, or can we afford to go up and get a higher salary? I think it's going to be really fun. I think skeptical at first for me, and now I'm kind of out like, this might be a good thing. It's just day two being too early is driving me crazy. So hopefully in the next coming years, they're moving it to later in the week and later in the night. But yeah, I think it's going to be a very fun day two. I think people are going to look back and be pleased and say, this was great.
Yeah, and it won't be just NBA teams taking a deep breath after round one. I'm sure you and I will be taking deep breaths as well, because normally it's a jam-packed night. Is that something when you found out the news that you were like, okay, like just as a content creator, like from that perspective, like did that make you excited, or were you kind of like, oh, great, like 2 full days of this thing?
You know what? I did like the full circle. Like at first I was like, oh, amazing. Like this is going to be great. You get to take a break and then have it. And then I was like, oh, we got to do more content. And it's not, because we usually get excited for the draft because it's just like one more night and we're done. And we get to take a deep breath for like a couple months. And now it's like, uh-oh, here we go. We got another one. We got to wake up and do it again. So it'll be fun. I think we're all excited about kind of the challenges. And actually, we're more excited about some of the content we couldn't make before, you know, when it comes to like a best available list. And that'll be really fun to kind of put together. So it's got its pluses and minuses. I think the day two will probably definitely feel it, but I'm excited for it.
So maybe it's starting earlier in the day. It's a little inconvenient, but at least it won't be two straight nights being up super duper late. So maybe that'll be a little bit better. We have another one here from Sam Moldenauer. How many of these guys are getting real minutes out of the gate?
You know, it's tough because I think this is the year to get rotation guys. So people might be a little bit like, well, they're not getting heavy minutes. And it's like, yeah, but they're going to be helping out your team in a big way. Like there's a lot of guys in this class I think could play serious minutes in a playoff series. Like there's just good value. I think this is the year to get depth, find guys like that. There's going to be some guys that in a weird way, I feel like might be a year behind developmental wise. And I only think they're going to get better if you keep playing them. So like teams might be like, hey, we know we're not going to be contending for the playoffs. We need to just play these guys, let them get some minutes. Wouldn't be shocked. Some guys spend some G League time. It's just, there is upside with a lot of these guys. They just going to need some time. It might be another year than some people are expecting, but I do think there's a lot of guys that could get real minutes out of the gate. I think when you get to a certain point in this draft, probably right around 11 on, there's some good depth. The top of this is struggling, but NBA teams are very excited about when you get kind of that mid first round on. There's just a lot of players that upperclassmen, tough, versatile, that could get real minutes out of the gate. So I would say you'll be pleasantly surprised, I think.
Yeah. And Sam did have a follow-up here. And do you have any late first-round sleepers? And he clarified this is to make an impact on a playoff roster. Is there any guys that you're particularly high on that we could see go in the later first, maybe even early second round, that will be able to make an impact early?
You know, I think like a Baylor Shireman, a Creighton, mm-hmm. is a name that a lot of playoff teams are praying falls to him. He's had a very, very good pre-draft process, so I think teams are a little nervous that he might not make it, but senior 6'7" that can shoot and is really smart, got some playmaking ability. I would say, gosh, I forgot, Tyler Kolick, another mm-hmm. good name from Marquette, lefty guard, just high feel. And I think a name like Kyle Filipowski might be on the board a little bit. I think he's trending that way. So a lot of good names down there. Jalen Tyson of Cal too. Like a lot of names that I think could intrigue teams, especially picking later first round that might shock people and get some early minutes. I think Kevin McCullough is the last one I would mention from Kansas. Like a lot of teams like him. He might go late first round, early second round, but wouldn't shock me if we're looking back and, you know, he's one of those Andrew Nimhard picks that were like, oh, he's playing in the playoffs already and making an impact. He's just got to stay healthy, but he can play.
Yeah. And that's the last question we have, but I have one more, and it's not yeah. much of a question. I just need you to sell me on Zachary Risacher, because I don't get it. Like I think he should be like, he's a good, or I see the vision, I guess is what I'm trying to say, is like, I see why he's intriguing. I just don't buy it. I'm just not a believer. But now apparently there's a really good chance that I'm going to be a fan because he's going to be on my team. So can you sell me on him, please?
Yeah, he's, you know, I think it's tough because a lot of people want him to be way more than he is right now. And then you got to kind of be like, okay, let me get back and open up the box to kind of see the whole picture here. And, you know, he's 6'9". He can shoot. He's a catch and shoot weapon. Everyone fascinates about the on-ball creation. He can get downhill and dunk on people. He plays with a little bit of an edge. I think the handles will improve. You know, you talk to coaches and they're like, shooting and in handles we can work on. We can get that better in mm-hmm. a hurry. Jaylen Brown's a perfect example. But Zach's a talented, smart player on both sides of the ball. I have done a complete shift with him from, I saw him at Nike Hoop Summit before the season even started, and I was like, I knew coming in, I was like, he's the next guy after Victor. Everyone's talking about from overseas. And I saw him and I was like, hey, he can shoot right away. But he just looked timid, looked like he was trying to find his place. His lower body is like, he's got tree trunks for legs. You're kind of like, this doesn't make sense, because you see the photos of his upper body and you're like, he's a twig. And then he's just got these thick legs. You're like, whoa, you're built like a truck. So he's got a good frame to build with. So there's a lot of good stuff. He's really young. I think he just turned 19, and seeing him then and seeing him this year at JL Borg, it is a complete shift of my mentality. Like, he was just possessed this year. I was jaw dropped watching some of the film earlier in the year. I was like, where's this kid been? So I think you're getting a guy, and you know, Jonathan Givony was on a podcast today, with Brian Windhorst, and Givony's been very high on him all year. And he was just cooking for a little bit. And he was just talking about, you know, their team wasn't that good before. They were one of the best defensive teams in the league this year. They played him everywhere. He was the guy that guarded the best player, even if it was the point guard. They ran him, you know, as a point guard sometimes. Like, I think people are sleeping on the upside he's got. He's got some good playmaking ability. And if you're getting 6'9 with a lot of tools untapped, that can shoot, like come in early and be a 3-and-D guy, we see how important those guys are. So it's tough, because Noah, you're not the only Hawks fan that has reached out to me and be like, can you tell me on Risacher? And I'm like, gladly. You know, I think it's one of those names where you get nervous, because in a normal draft year, if you got him at 8, I'd be ecstatic. But this year you're like 1, but then you start thinking like, it might be 1 with high upside and maybe a higher floor than people are thinking. Like, these are the guys that play for a long time. If you can play good defense and shoot it with size, you're going to make a lot of money at the NBA level. So I get it. I understand why you're hesitant, but I think there's a lot of good stuff working for him. And, you know, his age is also another great thing. So teams like him. Every time I talk to a team, they're like very high on him. I was like, oh, okay, this is a pleasant surprise. But yeah, very high on Risacher.
Okay, well, you've made me feel better knowing that it's probably going to be Klingon or Ricochet. Before I knew that was going to happen, those were like two guys I was a little bit lower on. So I was like, I don't know how that's going to go. But thank you for making me feel a little bit better. Obviously, it's a busy week for you and your team. What can we be on the lookout for to get more draft content this week?
We'll have we're at NoCeilingsNBA.com for anyone that hasn't checked it out. It's absolutely free. We're going to have a mock draft stream tomorrow on our YouTube channel. That'll just be a fun one where we're going to be like, hey, this is what we would do if we were running the teams. But then Wednesday morning, bright and early, draft day, we'll have a final predictions, you know, hopefully some little intel. Everyone loves that. And yeah, it's going to be a busy time. And for anyone that's trying to catch up, we've got a draft guide. So go check it out on our website. It's very, very lengthy, very detailed, some fun graphics. So no, thanks. Thank you, Noah, for having me on. Anytime you want to talk hoops, I'm there.
Definitely. We'll definitely have you back. Brad Altman said this was a very enjoyable show, that he learned a lot. I know I learned a lot and enjoyed talking with you, Tyler. So thank you so much for joining me. You guys can follow him on Twitter at Tyler_Rucker. And make sure to check out that draft guide and all the content they have this week at No Ceilings. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Tank Mulator Podcast. And I will see you guys next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.